Hi there, my name is Jerem Bogwa, and I'm the host of Crime and Consequences Kenya, a true crime podcast where we tell the life stories of our victims, who they were, what happened to them, and why they still matter. Our players today are Kenneth Thuita Freshia, the victim, Isaac Mburu Mwaniki, the first accused, Beth Waithira Mwangi, the second accused, David Njenga Kamau, the third accused, John Kariuki Wangui, the fourth accused, and Edward Githinji Mutwe, the fifth and final accused person in this case. Our story starts on September 14th of 2013. Kenneth had visited his grandmother and he got back to his mother's house at around 10 p.m. When he got home, his mother, Freshia Warige Thuita, informed him that one of her calves had gotten out of his shed and it was in the shamba and she needed his help to go find it. When they get to the shamba, they actually realized that it was a calf and another cow that had left their shed. So the both of them are trying to redirect the cows back to their shed so they can secure them for the night. It's at this time, as they're in the midst of securing the cows and trying to redirect them back to the shed, that Kenneth and his mother see a vehicle parked at a neighbor's gate. And it's really not something that happens very often because they took note of it. And they just concluded that maybe milk was being delivered really late at night. The vehicle was white in color, but that's all they could see. They couldn't see who was in the vehicle and they couldn't make out the number plates of the vehicle. So Kenneth, in the midst of all this, asks his mother if she knows who the car belongs to. And his mother is like, I really don't know, but let's not focus on that car. Let's put our attention back on getting these cows back to their shed because it's getting really, really late. And I need to go to bed. So they find the cows, they redirect them back to their shed, and then that's it. So after the cows was secure in the shed, Kenneth tells his mother, like, I'm just going to go to the house when you finish up doing what you're doing. So the mother's like, fine, I'm just going to make sure that the door is really, really secure because I don't want the cows getting out again. The cow shed that Kenneth and his mother were securing their cows in was only 30 meters from their house. But when Freshia gets home, Kenneth is not there. So she asks her daughter if Kenneth had returned, and her daughter said no, she had not seen Kenneth at all. Now, because Kenneth was diagnosed with epilepsy, his mother thought that he may have had an attack on his way back and he's somewhere needing help. So they go out and they start looking for him, but they don't find him anywhere. The next morning at 6 a.m., again, they go out, they're looking for Kenneth. They could not find him. They start alerting the neighbors that, you know, Kenneth has gone missing and he has this and that condition and we're just worried about him. If anybody sees him, let us know so that we know he's safe. So that morning was the morning of the 15th and a new player is introduced to the story. His name was Moses Njoronge Nganga. Moses Njoronge Nganga was also a farmer, and that morning he was taking his milk by the roadside where it's coming picked up by these big companies. As he was doing that, as he was waiting by the roadside, he notices a piece of paper on the ground and he picks it up. When he reads it, he realizes that it's a letter that's addressed to Kenneth's mother, but he doesn't really think too much about it. So he just leaves the letter where he finds it and he goes on about his business. And I'm guessing now, as more and more farmers were coming and as more and more people were picking up the note and reading it, it ends up in the hands of another player who is identified as Timothy Kamau Thuita. And Timothy Kamau Thuita is Kenneth's uncle. So when he takes the letter and he reads it, he immediately takes it to Freshia because the letter has been addressed to Freshia and this letter had been authored in Kikuyu. They call Kenneth's nephew, and he was identified as Moses Kuria Thuita, to come and read the letter to Freshia. The letter basically said that Kenneth had been kidnapped and the family should not think about going to the police or Kenneth was going to be harmed. And the author of the letter identified themselves as Mama Thuita. And Mama Thuita was claiming that she had decided to kidnap Kenneth because she was divorced from Kenneth's father and she thought that it was Kenneth's fault that the divorce had happened. So this was Kenneth's stepmother. After reading the letter, Freshia Timothy and Moses decide to take the letter to Olkalau police station and officially file a missing persons report. At Olkalau, Freshia, Moses and Timothy, as they were filing the report, the police asked them, do you have any suspects who you think could have done this? Or do you know who this Mama Thuita could be? And surprisingly, they actually don't mention, or I don't think they're believing that it's really the alleged author who's more Twitter that had done this because they mentioned other people. So they say that they suspect a person by the name of Isaac Mburu Mwaniki, who was our first accused, Beth Waithera Mwangi, who was our second accused, and Stephen Mwangi Ngari, who wasn't part of the accused people, but he was a neighbor and a very good friend of Kenneth. And they say that they may suspect him because sometimes Kenneth would go over to his house and he would spend the night at Stephen's house. They say that they suspected Isaac because about 3 weeks before, he had been to Kenneth's house at night and they'd seen him untying the cows. And remember, the reason why Kenneth and his mother were out there at 10 p.m. is because their cows had somehow gotten out of the shed. So they're like, 3 weeks ago, he did this and we saw him doing it. And then on the 14th, the same thing happened. So he's among our list of suspects. When they were asked why they suspect Beth Waithera Mwangi, remember that night that Kenneth and his mother were trying to get the cows back to the shed, they saw a white vehicle. So they say that they know that Beth owns a white car like the one they had seen that night. So those were their three primary suspects. However, Stephen Mwangi Ngari was ruled out because he recorded a statement the next day on the 16th of 2013 and he provided his alibi. The court documents really didn't list what his alibi was, but it was enough for him to be removed from the list of suspects. After this, now the family is like, this is getting really, really serious. It's been 2 days, we haven't seen him. They go now to the radio and the television, and now they officially announce the disappearance of Kenneth, and they're appealing to anybody who's seen him to just tell them anything. A couple of weeks go by, and now we're in October. On October 25th of 2013, at 7:25 a.m., Timothy, remember Timothy's Kenneth's uncle, he receives a message on his phone from somebody who said that they have Kenneth and they wanted 40,000 shillings within 18 hours or they would kill Kenneth. The message was sent from a Safaricom number, 0708-602-383. And over the next 3 days, the family would receive about 20 more messages, similar messages. We have Kenneth, you have to give us money or we will kill him. They even went, the messages, after seeing that the family is not sending any money, the kidnapper was actually reducing the amount of money that he was asking from the family. But because the family was not able to raise the money, all they could do was report their messages to the police station. And now this is where it seems that the investigations really picked up, is after the reception of these messages. The getting officer for this case was Sergeant Benedict Mwanzia, and he said that he had gotten instructions to start investigating Kenneth's case on 8th October 2013, and that's when he teamed up with some other officers and they headed to Alkalau. So they met the initial investigating officer, who was identified as Samuel Kankan, and he briefed them on what had been happening and that Kenneth had actually been reported missing about a month before on 15th of September 2013. So they go to Kenneth's home and they start their investigations afresh. That's when, again now on 25th of October, Timothy starts to get these ransom messages, and now the police finally have an actual lead that they can follow up on. So when the family informs the police of the ransom messages that they've been getting, they take down the details of the number that is messaging them and they start to track down who could be using that phone. So the first person that they traced was identified as David Ngige Mwangi, who was the third accused. David told them that he had lost his ID and he had gone to Alkalau police station and he had gotten an abstract, and he used that abstract to go get himself a new ID. While David was in custody, the family continued to receive the ransom messages, and that is how David was able to be ruled out as a suspect. They then traced the phone, the IMEI number of the phone that was being used to send the ransom messages, to a person who was identified as Anne Wangui. When they went and got Anne Wangui told them that in August of 2013, she had sold her phone to a man who was identified as Samuel Njuguna. The phone was a Samsung brand, and she told them that she sold it to him for 700 shillings. So the police go and then they tracked down Charles Njuguna, and Charles Njuguna tells them that he had also sold the phone, but he sold it to somebody who was identified as Daniel Piongo. The police then go and find Daniel Piongo, and Daniel Piongo tells them that I had the phone, but I also sold it, and I sold it to somebody who was identified as Isaac Mburu Kaburu. Remember, Isaac was our first accused in this case. Just as they're continuing to do the investigations, they also get data from Safaricom that shows that the SIM card that had been used to send one of the ransom messages had been used in the phone of somebody who was identified as Monica Ithupu. So they go to Monica's house and they arrest her in connection with the kidnapping. But Monica tells them that on October 24th, 2013, she was at home with her child when at around 4 p.m. her cousin visited. Her cousin told her that his phone had gone off and she just needed to borrow her phone for a little bit, send a text message, and then give the phone back to Monica. So Monica hands her phone to her cousin, and her cousin removes Monica's SIM card, puts his SIM card, sends the message, and deletes the message before handing the phone over back to Monica. So Monica says that she had no idea what the message said or who the message was sent to, because he had used his SIM card and not her SIM card. So she's arrested on October 28th, but then she's released a day later on October 29th. She identified her cousin also as Isaac Mburu Moniki. Now, this is the third time that Isaac is being mentioned. The first time he was mentioned in the case was when the family said that he was among the people they suspected to have kidnapped Isaac. The second time he's mentioned is when they trace the phone back to Anne, and then it traces all the way back to Isaac. And now the third time he's being mentioned is when they traced Monica and Monica pointed them in Isaac's direction. So on the same day that Monica is released, on October 29th, Isaac is arrested in his home in Silanga, and at his home they find a Samsung model that was similar to the one that had been traced as to having sent the ransom messages. The battery and the SIM card had been removed from the phone, and when Isaac was asked if there was anybody else with him, he said that he was alone. Sergeant Monzia said that he interrogated Isaac and allegedly said that Isaac had confessed to kidnapping Kenneth, but he had also named some more people. He had named accomplices who were with him. So he said that he planned and kidnapped Kenneth with the second to the fifth accused. During the interrogations, the police said that Isaac had mentioned Ben Waithera, David Njeka, John Kariuki, and Edward Githinji. And all these people were also arrested and questioned in connection to the kidnapping of Isaac, of Kenneth. Isaac then takes the police to Olkalau town, where he said that he had registered the SIM with the phone that he had bought, and he took them to a shop called Better Green Agro, and this shop actually also belonged to Monica. Monica was his cousin. So he says that this is where he registered the SIM card using David Jenga's ID, and when the police took a copy of the registration book, they actually confirmed that the SIM had been registered in David's name, and they also took handwriting specimens from that registration book and forwarded them to a document examiner to compare with the letter that had been sent to Fresha, Kenneth's mother. On November 15th of 2013, Naomi Wanguwa Njiru and her friend identified just as Muthoni were walking home when they decided to stop by a bush and look for some firewood. As they were looking for firewood and some herbs in the bush, they saw clothes, they got curious, they decided to go near and just see what was happening. Well, there was just a pile of clothes randomly in a bush. So they say that they saw a trouser, a jumper, boxer shorts, and the closer that they got, they then saw a jaw that was resembling that of a human being next to the clothes. So they say that they moved it around with a stick because they were trying to really be sure that this is a human jaw that they just found. And both of them came to the conclusion that it must be human because of the teeth. So when they realized this, they immediately go to a village elder. They informed him about what they found. They took him to where they found everything. Now, and then after that, they went to the police station. So the police go to the crime scene. They take photos, they process the scene, and they pick up as much evidence as they can, and then they send it to the DCA Nairobi for processing. Now, government chemist, who was identified as John Kimani Mungai, said that he examined the bones because he was trying to generate a profile of who they could belong to. When the bones were found, I forgot to add that Fresha's mother was asked for some DNA samples so that they could try and figure out if this was Kenneth that they had found. So the government chemist had a lower jawbone with teeth, he had a collarbone, and he had the mouth swabs that were taken from Fresha, and then he also had the pieces of clothes that were found with the body. After doing his analysis, the government chemist stated that the mouth swabs and the lower jaw and teeth were compatible. The results came back with a 99.99% chance that the lower jawbone with the teeth in the collarbone originated from a son of Fresha. A post-mortem was conducted on November 26th at the Nakuru Municipal Council mortuary, and the post-mortem was conducted by Dr. Titus Ngulungu. So the doctor stated that the remains were human bones, and from his analysis, the skull was identified as that of a person of African origin. He said that the bones came with a red t-shirt and some clothes tied in knots. There was a noose, trousers and a blue sweater. He also said that the clothes had maggots and some lava that was just in there somewhere. So according to him, it wasn't possible to identify the bones anatomically because of how badly they had disintegrated. But there was evidence that savages had attacked the tissues. So probably like stray dogs had come and eaten at the body as it was disintegrating. Additionally, he said that it was not possible to 100% identify a cause of death because there was no skin, no muscle, or a respiratory system. However, because of the presence of a noose, he suggested that probably the person had died from manual strangulation, but he said that he could only speculate using the items that he had in front of him. So when Isaac is arrested and he mentions the four other people, they are all also arrested and questioned, and a case is opened against them. So now let's move on to their defenses. In his defense, Isaac, who was the first accused, stated that he was not involved in the kidnapping or murder, and he also refused what the police was saying that he had confessed. He said that he had not confessed to any kidnapping or murder, and he stated that he had no relationship with Kevin, but he knew Timothy, who was Kevin's uncle. He said that he had actually heard about the kidnapping from radio and television and people in the village talking about it. So he really didn't know why he was being implicated or arrested in connection with the kidnapping of Kenneth. The day after Kenneth disappeared, he says that Timothy had approached him and asked him if he had seen Kenneth, and he told him that no, I haven't seen Kenneth anywhere. He also denied sending any messages of ransom to the family, and stated that he held no grudge against Kenneth's mother or Timothy, and he honestly had nothing to do with the death of Kenneth. The second accused, Benwithira Mwangi, also denied the charges and stated that she had known Kenneth since he was a child. She said that she had learned about his disappearance from Kenneth's aunt, but was also later informed by her taxi driver David that he was being arrested over allegations that he had used his car to help Isaac in kidnapping Kenneth. Remember, when Frisia and Kenneth were trying to get the cows back to their shed, they saw a white vehicle, and Beth was said to own a white vehicle, and this white vehicle, she was using it for taxi business, and the driver of this taxi was David Njenga, who was the third accused. Let's go to David's defense. David Njenga denied killing Kenneth and said that he only knew of the disappearance from a neighbor. After he found out about the disappearance, he says that he actually called Timothy to confirm the kidnapping and just offer his condolences and promised to try and help as much as he could. Then he says that later, the police summoned him and his car, the white car that he'd been using as a taxi, and they questioned him and told him that he had been mentioned in connection with the disappearance of Kenneth. So David was actually locked up for 3 days, and they questioned him about the relationship that he had with Isaac. They questioned him about if it was him who was there that night, and he denied everything. He said that he had not kidnapped anybody and he was definitely not involved in the murder of anybody. The fourth accused, John Karaoke, also denied the charges and testified that he had heard about Kenneth's disappearance after a month in November of 2013. After that, he had just gone about his business before the police came and arrested him and told him that Isaac had said that he was also among the people who were involved in the planning and the kidnapping of Kenneth. Edward Githinji, the fifth accused, testified that he came to know of Kenneth's disappearance actually when he had been arrested. So he completely denied that he had been involved in any planning or kidnapping or murder, and that he did not know why Isaac would try and implicate him in something like that. He said that I'm not connected to this in any way. So as the police were doing investigations, they actually found a link between all these people. It was established that all the five people who had been accused had known each other for a very, very long time, going back to primary school. They'd all gone to primary school together. Beth, David, John, and Edward, in the defenses, after of course denying being involved in the kidnapping and denied being involved with Isaac, they also said that maybe there was a probability that the place where he had been found, he had gotten an epileptic attack and he probably died after he fell. Another part of the defense was that there were no witnesses, or even no, you see the way Isaac was being linked, you know, the phone was used here, it's traced back to Isaac. The SIM card is used here, it's traced back to Isaac. They said that there were no links with them to Isaac, talking about this kidnapping, planning it in any way. And also there were no witnesses who had seen them at the area where Kenneth had been found at any point. However, when the prosecution was presenting its case, it refuted these claims, stating that, first of all, the prosecution refuted the claims that Kenneth could have died from an epileptic attack, stating that the doctor who had conducted the post-mortem said that the most probable cause of death was strangulation. They also said that the doctor who conducted the post-mortem indicated that epilepsy is only life-threatening in some circumstances. For example, if Kenneth was to fall near a mass of water, then he would drown as he was having an attack. Otherwise, the prosecution said that the doctor said an epileptic attack sometimes lasts for just 5 minutes and then it disappears. So it was very unlikely that he had died from an epileptic attack. The prosecution also argued that they had Isaac's confession, and Isaac had mentioned every single person that had been arrested. And Isaac had also told the police that the kidnapping had happened under the instruction of Beth, and that is why the car was there, so that they could kidnap Kenneth, put him in the car, and then drive him somewhere. And that everybody that had been implicated had been mentioned in his confession. And when all these people did not receive the ransom money, then they decided to kill Kenneth. So this case was presided over by Judge Charles Kariuki, and during his ruling, he stated that the prosecution had managed to prove that the death of Kenneth was unlawful. However, he stated that he did not believe that the prosecution had been able to effectively prove that the second to the fifth accused, that is everybody apart from Isaac, were involved with the kidnapping and eventual murder of Kenneth. He said in a quote, "I'm further convinced that the deceased was murdered due to the presence of the noose at the scene where the bones were found and additional surrounding circumstances that will be discussed in this judgment. I agree with the doctor that the same could indicate that the deceased was manually strangled, and in my view, the same is possible cause of death. It's unfortunate that the remaining parts of his body were not recovered to aid in establishing the cause of his death, and even what was available had sadly been attacked by savages. Further, I am afraid I have to disagree with the assertion put forth by the second to fifth accused that it is possible that the deceased had an epileptic fit which caused him to faint. Afterwards, dogs attacked him for the reasons that shall be advanced below. In my opinion, there's overwhelming evidence pointing towards the kidnapping and eventual murder of the deceased." So the judge pointed out that the evidence against the accused persons was purely circumstantial. He said, just as I mentioned, he said the prosecution had failed to effectively prove that Isaac had actually confessed, and that there wasn't any link between everybody except Isaac, everybody that had been arrested, the other four people. There was no direct link between them and the crime that had happened. He said, "I believe there was no evidence that the first accused had confessed. It was erroneous for the prosecution to rely on any such confession by the first accused, and especially for the police to arrest the second to fifth accused persons based on such confession without conducting any independent investigations on their link to the deceased kidnapping murder." The judge added that despite Frasier saying that she saw a white car on the night that Kenneth was kidnapped, there wasn't really any more evidence to prove that this white car she saw belonged to Beth or was being driven by David at the time. Because remember, as we were starting this story, we said that Kenneth and Frasier saw this white car, but that's all they could see. They could just see that it was a white car. They couldn't see who was driving the car, and they couldn't see the number plates of the car. So all they had to go on is, "We saw a white car." So the judge was basically saying that this white car could have belonged to anybody. This white car could have been driven by anybody. There's no proof that it's the same car that Beth owns or it's the same car that is driven by David. He said in a quote, "Further, there's no forensic evidence linking the second to fifth accused to the first accused and the deceased kidnapping murder. To make it worse, I don't understand why the fourth and fifth accused were even charged with the offense or how they were linked to the first accused or the deceased murders. The police and the prosecution dropped the ball in arresting and further charging the second to the fifth accused persons with the deceased murder without availing any evidence whatsoever as to how they were involved in the plot to kidnap and murder the deceased." So basically he was saying that you guys just arrested all these people because one person said that, yes, it was this one and that one and that one. And nobody did any investigations to try and find any forensic links between these other four people, to Isaac or to Kenneth and his mother. The judge stated that the prosecution had failed to prove their case against the second to the fifth accused, but he was convinced that Isaac was involved in the kidnapping and disappearance of Kenneth. So therefore, Beth, David, John, and Edward, who are the second, the third, the fourth, and the fifth accused, were acquitted of all charges, but Isaac was found guilty of kidnapping and murder. And on October 28th, 2024, Isaac was sentenced to 30 years in prison with time served. So he had already spent, at this point, he had already spent 11 years in remand, and he will probably be released in 2043 after serving the rest of the 19 years that are remaining his sentence. And that is the very unfortunate story of Kenneth Dwita Frazier. It was such a long and complicated case. I remember the first time I read this case and I was trying to piece together everything that happened. I was lost so many times. And I went online to try and find more information about this case, and there was nothing. There was nothing. This case was not reported anywhere that I could find, at least. But I really do hope, I feel like it took way too long for this family to get justice. 11 years is, that's more than a decade that it took for them to get justice, especially seeing how easy it was for the police to track down the person who was actually sending these ransom messages. I feel like, I don't understand why it took 11 years for this person to be prosecuted. And also I feel like the police were a bit lazy when it came to really investigating the other four people and seeing if they could have actually been connected to this crime in any way. But anyway, if you've reached the end of this episode, thank you so much for taking your time to listen to me. I really do appreciate it. This is the final episode of the first season of Crime and Consequence KE, and I'm very, very, very excited to get there. Yeah, I've heard this has been such a long case. I don't even have much to say. I'm just thank you to the progress has been really amazing. Like the listenership has been really good. The engagement on the socials has been really good. And I'm just very, very grateful to everybody who takes the time to listen to me, and to everybody who follows me up until now. Thank you so much. I can't wait for season 2. I have been planning on adding a bit more segments to the show just to make the show a bit more engaging. And yeah, just fingers crossed that everything works out. But if you've made it to the end of this episode, thank you so much. I hope you have a very good day. And if you want to follow me on other platforms, you can follow me on Instagram. I am Crime and Cons KE. TikTok, I'm Crimes and Cons KE. And I finally have a Facebook, Crime and Consequence KE by Njeri Mbogwa. The podcast is also now available on other platforms apart from Spotify. I'm available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, AfriPod, and CastBox. So I've given you guys more options to find me. But thank you so much for staying with me up until this point. I hope you have a very good Wednesday or whatever it is that you're going to be listening to this. And I will see you guys next season. Bye.